Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. I'd like to welcome you to this program broadcasting all over the world. This is going to be one of those empowering hours. It's our Talk Back segment. No guest, just all the information on health, social issues, and most importantly, throughout the entire program, your issues. What do you find significant? You can give us a call. Our number is 888-874-4888. Today, from our environmental segment, we're going to talk about how the USDA declares drought disaster in most of the wheat belt in the United States just today. Mass extinction forecast with a 6-degree centigrade temperature rise. Many people, climatologists, believe that we're going to hit that. So that's serious. I'll discuss that. Also, Fracamedia. How Big Gas bought the research on hydraulic fracturing, and thanks to the fossil fuel industry sponsorship, we know all about the benefits of natural gas, but we don't have the data on its risks. Richard Schiffman from The Guardian. Also, we'll focus upon some issues that are important today, including the food system's failure. Up to half the world's food is wasted all the time. The U.S., we're ranked dead last of all industrialized countries with our health care. Quote from Carrie Byron, the U.S. health is worse than nearly all other industrialized countries. And also on an issue, how is it that a major corporation can get away with poisoning its troops? Yeah, you heard me right. And I'll show you an article from Nora Eisenberg from Alternet where major military contractor, one that all the people in this audience have heard about, and used to be run by Dick Cheney, KBR, Kellogg Brown Root, subsidiary of Halliburton, and he ran Halliburton. Well, they've been poisoning the troops and thought they could get away with it until they didn't get away with it. 10 years after they poisoned our troops, they were found guilty. And they ended up being fined $85 million for a dozen plaintiffs who sued and won. I'm going to tie this in with why we shouldn't be suing the vaccine manufacturers for having equally poisoned but far more people with far more deleterious effects, including death. I'll deal with that on today's program. The latest on health and healing, of course, and that's where we begin. I'm sure many of you have seen the food shows that are proliferating out there about supersized meals. And it's no longer to have a sandwich. You have to have what amounts to 5 or 6 or 7 sandwiches in one. You'll have your burger, but there's also the cheese and lots of it. Then there's the bacon, lots of that too. Sausage, which is just another form of bacon. And then eggs. And then something else, and just huge sandwiches. But something very popular is the McRib sandwich. Anthony Gucciardi tells us something about it that we didn't know. Thank you, Anthony, for informing us. According to Anthony, this McRib season, thousands across the nation are scrambling to use online websites like the McRib Locator. Why? Well, so they can stuff the McDonald's McRib sandwich down their throats. A sandwich is not only full of genetically modified ingredients, a medley of toxic fillers and preservatives, but also some ingredients that are actually banned in other nations around the world. The McRib is the result of intensive marketing by McDonald's, utilizing the basics of supply and demand through creating scarcity over the McRib by only unleashing the culinary dish for a fraction of the year that is only known once to be released. McDonald's fans have been known to hoard McRib sandwiches and eat them in extreme excess. It's even a topic of the popular documentary Supersize Me. McDonald's even made McRib fans sign a petition to save the McRib online, bringing out a conglomerate of fans to bring back their favorite Franken sandwich. So here's my interest, and I'm sure many of you, talking to your friends and family that still believe that it's perfectly acceptable, even necessary, to eat this kind of food. What's inside the McRib, specifically, that makes it such a bad choice? It contains over 70 ingredients. A lot of those are surprises, including restructured meat. Ah, that's technology jargon. What does it really mean? Well, what they do is this. They take traditionally discarded parts from the animal, and they mix them together to create a rib-like substance. Now, here's some of the disturbing substances found within the McDonald's McRib sandwich, and we can thank Anthony Gucciardi for sharing this with us. Out of the 70 ingredients that make up the pork sandwich, a little-known flour bleaching agent lies among them. Now, this is a azo-dicarbonamide. At first glance, this strange ingredient sounds rather odd. Just do your research and you'll find that even mainstream media outlets have generated content revealing how serious it is. And it's used in the production of foam plastics. Foam plastics like yoga mats. What's more, in Australia and Europe, the use of this particular ingredient as a food additive is banned. In Singapore specifically, use of this substance in food can result in a $450,000 fine and 15 years in jail. So McDonald's has no problems, no qualms, no moral challenge about supplying our nation with these unhealthy ingredients. What'd you say that restructured meat was? Well, pig heart, pig tongue, and pig stomach. Now, McDonald's McRib is famous in some circles for utilizing what's known as restructured meat technology. Now, here's the reality. Would you go into a restaurant and say, give me a pig heart? I don't think so. Or pig tongue wouldn't look very appetizing. And pig stomach, that's getting grosser. And how about the pig intestine? You know, it's a southern delicacy. I knew a lot of people that ate that. And they thought, and the tradition in the South is that you soak it in water for 3 days, and that's supposed to somehow clean all the debris out of it. Well, that debris is feces. But it doesn't work that way. You could soak it in there for a year, and you're still going to have fecal matter, and you're going to have it contaminated. And then they boil it sometimes for a day, and then they add in all their different ingredients, and sometimes they actually tie it so that the ingredients are cooked along with the innards. Now, that's really gross. That means you're eating crap. But that doesn't seem to mind some of the people I grew up with, man. Oh, brother. And so nobody's going to put that on a menu in most places. No one's going to eat that. So what they do is very clever. They use the technology that's been around for a while, and they blend all that together, and they flake it, and then that becomes a restructured product. And hence, when you flake it, it loses identity. It no longer looks like a heart or a tongue or intestine or stomach. It's just tripe, heart, and scalded stomachs all mixed together. So in other words, it's not actually a rib at all. Instead, it's a combination of unwanted animal scraps processed down in major facilities and restructured into the form of a rib. Then they put 70 additives in it, chemicals, fillers, and GMO ingredients, and have a meat product that tastes like ribs, but there's no rib. Now, what would happen if they did a commercial showing us each and every step of production? How many people you think would be hoarding and eating those ribs? But they're not ribs, just fake food and bad food at that. The key to happiness, keeping busy without feeling rushed. from Tom Jacobs, Pacific Standard. Now, who amongst us are the most happy? According to this newly published research, it suggests that those fortunate folks who have little or no excess time and yet seldom feel rushed, they work at an even pace. Now, this busy but blissful group comprises about 8% of the American population, making it a, quote, small and unusual minority within the general population, according to the University of Maryland sociologist, this John Robinson. According to his analysis, the happiness level of this group is 25% higher than that of those of most Americans. And what's more, while the general population's happiness level is going down, theirs is going up. 53% of people in this group call themselves very happy, and that's good. So the takeaway message is that if you're doing something you really like and you don't lose yourself in what you're doing, so you still have balance in your life, and you kind of do it in a nice, even way. You don't have these big highs and lows, and you don't get burned out. Then the idea is that that you're going to feel good about life overall, and you're not going to be stressed. So liking what you do and pacing yourself in it makes a big difference. I remember once sitting at the dining table. That's where we met with my family every day around 5 o'clock, and we had our dinner. Everything that was going on in our lives of any significance would be discussed. All of us were athletes, so we'd talk about our sporting events or training and games or competition. Everything else in school was discussed. And my family didn't eat big portions of food, except my father, who always had to have this 2-inch steak. It literally had to be 2 inches. In fact, butchers in my hometown, we had little butchers, and we had little tiny stores where you go in and get your bread, and others get your vegetables, and others get the meat. And everyone had worked at those forever, generation after generation after generation, many going back to before the Civil War. In fact, one of the most interesting things I ever did in my life is this was in the summertime. I'd be at the farm, and after milking the cows in the morning, putting them in these containers, being in the back of the truck and going into the bottom of Parkersburg, which sits on the Ohio River, right across from Ohio, and there's the Ohio River, which met the Kanawha River. Kanawha was always brown, and the Ohio was not. But down there is where Parkersburg originally had been settled, so therefore these old buildings were down there, and some of them were 150 years old. But down there is where you took the dairy, and then they'd pour it in these big containers. And then you would see people sitting around. And my father knew these people, and I was just a kid. But I'd watch them, and these were old men. And they'd sit there in their bib overhauls and their flannel shirts. And I don't care what time of year it was. It could be summer, and they'd be whittling. They'd have a little pocket knife, and they'd be whittling on a piece of wood. And there'd be generally a old stove, pot-belly stove, and they'd be keeping that going. And I'd just watch them. I never heard them say a word. And one time I said to my dad, I said, "Why don't they say anything?" And Dad just looked at me and smiled. He said, "They're saying a lot. You're just not paying attention." And then he explained to me how, you know, when someone comes in, how they look at you and the expression, it tells you something. They have their own silent way of communicating. They've been doing that their whole lives. It's just one of those special moments as a kid. Then you had the meal. And every one of those butcher shops prided itself that you could give a 2-inch thick steak, including the fat that went around it. That showed that you were a responsible, middle-class, working person versus having to get a cheaper cut of meat like rump roast or oxtail or something else or flank. And then I would sit there and I would eat all the vegetables, but I remember this one particular day, I'm looking at the vegetables, and I couldn't tell the broccoli from the asparagus from the potato, because everything was just boiled to death. It was just mushy. And, of course, they boil it with the meat, and so it had that meaty, kind of gooey fat that was in everything, and I didn't like that at all. And so that's the first time I remember asking my mom, could I, cook my vegetables so they weren't mush. Yeah, okay. And everybody was surprised because nobody ever really ate vegetables. They ate the bread, which was just a white bread with butter on it. They had the big piece of meat. They had a big potato with butter on it or gravy. And they had dessert, which was always pie or cake or ice cream. Then they had coffee, and they smoked cigarettes for about an hour afterwards. And then people go out and lay on a couch. In my home, the couches have permanent indentations. Everybody would go comatose after one of these meals. And I can't remember ever anyone asking for vegetables. So let's just say that you're in one of those unfortunate predicaments where you're not going to get your family or friends to change. We have no right to insist they do. But we can be a little provocative, meaning we can suggest that they do something to help them if they're going to keep bad habits. Here's the latest on this. This is from the Journal of Food Science. And what they're saying is vegetables help digest red meat. I'll quote this. It says, a healthy complement of vegetables can help to digest steak and prevent illnesses that come from diet heavy in red meat. This according to the latest research out of New Zealand. And the research is published in the Journal of Food Science, suggests that the impact of red meat consumption on bowel health could be reduced if it was eaten with fermented foods that are rich in fiber. Fermented carbohydrates, including most fruits and vegetables, delivered a colonic energy source that produced less harmful byproducts in the microbial breakdown of colonic protein for energy. And, quote, the proteins we eat can influence the metabolism of microbiota in our gut and therefore our bowel health, said the scientist, in this, quote, while most proteins are digested and absorbed by the small intestine, undigested proteins reaching the large bowel is fermented and can result in potentially toxic compound, like colorectal cancer. Our research showed that by delivering dietary constituents that supported beneficial bacteria and restricting the growth of pathogenic bacteria in the large intestine, we were able to have positive effects of the host health. So in lay language, what does this mean? Okay. If they're going to eat their meat, which they're going to eat, or chicken, or fish, or pork, and they're not going to stop, then encourage them to have lots of vegetables with it. If they have the vegetables, and especially vegetables like cabbage, that can cause good bacteria in the intestine, and that helps displace the bad bacteria caused by the fermentation of meat. Because meat really putrefies when it breaks down. Now, I'll give you the simple example. Your intestine is about 97 plus degrees. It's very warm in there, and moist, and dark. Now, if you're really healthy, you've got good bacteria by the trillions growing all throughout your intestine. These bacteria help facilitate a healthy immune response because about 60% of your body's entire immune system is around your gastrointestinal system. So when you're drinking clean water, you're eating clean, healthy, vibrant, enzymatically and phytonutrientally and antioxidantly rich foods, fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts, seeds, legumes, tubers, herbs, and healthy juices, then all that helps to sweep out the bad bacteria, help facilitate excellent digestion, absorption, and elimination. That's the ideal. So my suggestion is ask them to take lots of vegetables, and help prevent colorectal cancer. And this study is one of the first to confirm it. That's good. An herb for thought. Well, this is a good herb. Devil's claw. Now, devil's claw means hook plant in Greek, and it's native of Africa, and its name from the appearance of its fruit, which is covered with hooks, meaning to attach onto animals in order to spread the seeds. And the roots and the tubers of the plant are used to make medicine. Now, devil's claw, according to Health Impact News, is used for, quote, hardening of the arteries, which is atherosclerosis, arthritis, gout, muscle pain, back pain, tendonitis, chest pain, gastrointestinal upset or heartburn, fever, migraine headache. It's also used for difficulties in childbirth and menstrual problems, allergic reactions, a loss of appetite, kidney and bladder disease. And some people apply devil's claw to the skin for injuries and other skin conditions. It's effective for decreasing pain from a kind of arthritis called osteoarthritis. Taking devil's claw alone or with a quality, another pain reliever like cayenne, even enhances it. In fact, the higher the heat value of the cayenne, the more pain relief you're going to get. And it contains chemicals that decrease inflammation and swelling that result in pain. And it's safe. Not a problem there. So, I wouldn't take it if I'm looking at someone who is pregnant or breastfeeding, and because it can enhance heart rate and heartbeat and improve blood pressure, I wouldn't take it if you have high blood pressure. And it stabilizes blood sugar, so diabetics should be a little careful. But it's very, very important to use. But always use this in association with a healthcare professional who can then say, oh, you're using warfarin, you can't use it. Always know that some herbs are so good, even some juices are so good, that they can thin the blood, helping prevent a stroke. But what if you're already taking a blood thinner? Then you can overthin the blood. From Science Daily, published in the Frontiers in Human Neuroscience, researchers at Massachusetts General Hospital said meditation appears to produce enduring health in emotional processing in the brain. Quote, the two different types of meditation training our study participants completed yielded some differences in the response of the amygdala, a part of the brain known for decades to be important for emotion, to images with emotional content. And here's what it says in lay language, that if you just took a little time each day and you just sat quietly and just let yourself relax, breathe deeply, put a little more force on your exhale than your inhale, and just allow your whole body to relax, your forehead, your neck, your shoulders, your back, your arms. Allow your breathing to relax. Just visualize your digestion relaxing. That this can actually impact emotions in a positive way in the brain. And therefore, you're less likely to over-respond or respond inappropriately to stressful situations. And finally, a compound in grapes and red wine could be a key to fighting prostate cancer. This is good news. University of Missouri published in the Cancer Journal. I'll quote this. Scientists at the University of Missouri have found that treatment with a compound found in grape skins and red wine could increase the chances of a full recovery from all types of prostate cancer, including aggressive tumors. Now, University of Missouri researchers have discovered that the compound can make prostate tumor cells more susceptible to radiation treatment, including the chances of a full recovery from all types of prostate cancer. Quote, other studies have noted that resveratrol made tumor tumor cells more susceptible to chemotherapy, and we wanted to see if it would be the same for radiation therapy. This is according to the professor of surgical oncology at Missouri University School of Medicine. Quote, we found that when exposed to the compound resveratrol, the tumor cells were more susceptible to radiation treatment, but that the effect was greater than just treating with both compounds separately, end quote. That's terrific. Now, we know, for example, that prostate tumor cells contain very low levels of two proteins, perforin and granzyme B, which can function together to kill cells. However, both proteins need to be highly expressed to kill tumor cells. In this study, they found that resveratrol interfered in that process. And as a result, 97% of the tumor cells died, which is much more than radiation or chemotherapy could do, and it's safe. So the takeaway message, many of you are getting your resveratrol every single day because you're taking either vegetable powders or fruit powders, green or red powders, that contain it in very high dosages. One more reason why you've been on the right side of the South equation for a long time. A few comments on our environmental issues, and then I'm going to open it up for your calls. From Reuters, from Charles Abbott, the USDA declares drought disaster much of the wheat belt. And this is the southern wheat belt, a natural disaster due to persistent drought that imperils this year's winter wheat harvest. Its first disaster declaration of the new year, the Agriculture Department made growers in large portions of four major wheat-growing states, Kansas, Colorado, Oklahoma, and Texas, eligible for emergency loans. And the four states grew one-third of the U.S. wheat crop last year. Kansas was the number one grower of wheat in the United States with 382 million bushels. So here's what this means. Let's go back a little bit in time, where I told you that there are going to be 16 states in the United States that simply will not be able to be sustainable in the future. But the future is coming rapidly. That's because the greatest aquifer in the United States is running out of water, that there have been too many people moving to these areas. The major cities in these areas are always expanding. Industry is expanding the use of water. And then in comes the heat. The heat is so hot that some types of seeds will simply die. They won't germinate. And if they do germinate, it's just too hot for them to go through a normal cycle. For example, this year, normally, you'll get loquats, which are both Italian and a Chinese fruit. They look about like an egg, and when they turn yellow, you've got about 5 days to use them, and you can eat the skin and the flesh, and there's a little seed in there, and I suggest that you keep the seed and pot it, and you'll have your own loquat tree, and it grows very fast, over a foot a year, sometimes 2 feet a year, 3 feet a year. And in about 3 years, you get nice fruit. In 5 years, you get huge amount of fruit. I have 40, 45 loquat trees, and I get about 1,000 loquats per tree. Now, normally, you start seeing the blooms in February, and you start seeing the first of the fruit at the beginning of March. Now, you see the blooms in early December, and already fruit is growing. I had to tell my caretaker to pick the fruit and put it into a dehydrator because otherwise it's just going to waste. Animals love it. It's great to eat. And by the way, if you're a homesteader, loquats sell for retail about $3 each. Well, just imagine, you know, if you had one tree, full tree, gives you 1,000 loquats, that's $3,000. So it's good for you. It's good source of income. Farmers markets, people love it because it's something different and exotic and great tasting. But they're all blooming too early. It's out of season because the temperature is so hot. Wheat will die if it's too hot. Corn will definitely die if it's too hot. So you say, so what? You know, I live in Brooklyn, I live in the Bronx, I live in Manhattan, I live in Queens, Staten Island, I live in Jersey. I can go down the street and I can find a gazillion you know, out, farmers markets, specialty grocery stores, high-end exotic stores, I can find all the food I want. That's correct. But the basis of most people's diets, either soy or corn, as far as a grain, and that's diminishing. And a lot of that's grown to send overseas to other countries where they really depend upon it. And that's being limited, just like last year's harvest of wheat out of Russia was so destroyed it didn't export anything. It had to use it for its own people because it was so hot it caught on fire, massive fires all over Russia. And the same is happening now with flooding. Flooding is washing out all the seeds in Bangladesh and Pakistan, much of India, in the Philippines and other places. So when the soil goes and the seed goes with it and the crop goes with it, you can't just walk out to a store and get what you need the next day. These are poor people. It takes time. It can take 6 months before a crop comes back in and is harvested and is able to be used. Rice, wheat, soy. So where we have other sources of protein, many people, that is their primary source. Some places in the world, they're happy just to eat a loaf of bread a day. In Syria today, you're lucky to get a loaf of bread. So I try to connect the dots to a larger view of something. So if we have now a state of emergency in the middle of the winter, imagine what that does come the summer. It means a hotter summer. Right now, this week, all across America, hundreds of records are being broken for the hottest days on record for this time of year. That means that you're going to have a really hot spring and then hotter summer, which means you're going to have a lot of drought. So one more reason why, if you can, to get into farming, get yourself a small farm someplace that has water and soil and practice hydroponics. You can do it organically, and you can control the temperature, and you have a good quality well, then you can grow food for yourself and for others. I believe we have to do that. And just a heads up from Paul Brown from Climate News Network, quote, mass extinction forecast with 6 degrees Celsius temperature rise. And he's saying that that it's going to be bad if the temperature keeps going up, and the temperature is going to keep going up because no one wants to do anything about it. I mean, no one in power. Those who are not in power want to do a lot about it, but you're going to have to do it on an individual level, small collective level, because industry's not going to do anything. Government's not going to force the industries to do anything because the industries control the government. So the hotter it gets, species are going to die out. And then the food supply is going to be diminished. And then a lot of trees, old world trees, high altitude trees, are going to be killed by beetles that normally couldn't hurt them because of the high altitude and the coldness prevented the beetles from existing. But now those high altitudes are warmer and the beetles are proliferating and the trees are dying by the tens of millions. So if we get so locked into a lifestyle that we don't pay attention to the world we're in, then one day that world is knocking on our door. I mentioned about Nora Eisenberg from AlderNet. This is short but worth noting. In the spring and summer, quote, of 2003, when U.S. troops were guarding cleanup of a neglected water treatment plant in Basra oil fields in southern Iraq, they noticed orange dust scattered on the floor and sitting in open sacks. Within weeks, several were suffering nosebleeds, eye irritation, sore throats, and anxiety about the dust's relationship to their new maladies. No danger, supervisors of KBR, the mega military service contractor in charge of the cleanup, assured them. They were just not used to the desert sand. In September 2003, KBR, formerly Kellogg Brown Root and a subsidiary of Halliburton, closed the facility. But the physical problems and anxieties about future illnesses prevailed. The orange powder, the troops learned, was sodium dichromate, an anti-corrosive compound containing hexavalent chromium, a known carcinogen. It's the same toxin that Aaron Brockovich found leached into the groundwater near Southern California's pipelines, resulting in cancerous tumors. Almost 10 years later, and just this past November, a federal jury in Portland has ruled in favor of the 12 troops, finding KBR exposed troops to poison, acting, quote, with reckless and outrageous indifference to a highly unreasonable risk of harm and conscious indifference to the health, safety, and welfare of others, end quote. Well, good. The jury awarded the dozen plaintiffs $85 million. And here's my thoughts on this. I believe that even though they have been indemnified by the U.S. government, which means we the taxpayers, and we've given this company $31 billion in military contracts. These are the people that charge $100 to do a quarter's worth of laundry on a single duffel bag for a week. That's how much money they make. Now, one of the reasons I'm very concerned about bureaucracies, especially the military-industrial complex, well, all bureaucracies, no exceptions. They know how to play the system. They know how to rig the system to make massive profits, provide us with minimal service, and hold themselves without any liability. Unless they've been found to have lied, unless they have committed fraud, then that indemnification barrier is removed. So here's my thoughts. There are thousands of transactions that have occurred where companies from Wall Street, banks to pharmaceutical houses to industrial complex like Halliburton that have been found guilty and paid enormous fines. But no one's ever gone to jail. I believe that we can now show that virtually every single vaccine is being used with enormous injury, without adequate safety and efficacy. That in and of itself would not remove their shield of indemnification, but to show that they've engaged in fraud and malice aforethought, having known that there were not good studies, no good double-blind placebo-controlled human studies, no gold standard of independent analysis, and therefore, they would be open to class action lawsuits. I'm almost finished with a major documentary on this very topic. Every single expert in the film, all women, medical doctors and professors, have stated when I've asked them directly, is there any proof that any given vaccine or combination of vaccines has been shown by independent analysis to be safe for everyone using it and non-harmful to everyone using it? They said, never. Absolutely not. Nor would any of the people that I interviewed say that they would ever recommend a vaccine or use it for themselves. And yet, virtually every vaccine group in the country that I've met still advocate vaccines. That's because they say, well, you know, we're concerned about bad lots. So this hopefully will open up their minds to see the real science is not there to support the efficacy and safety. A major article on the efficacy of the flu vaccine, which we're all being told to get, was posted. It's up on the website, GaryNull.com, plus my Facebook, plus ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, to show you that they don't have any of the science on their side to be recommending this to everyone, and especially not recommending senior citizens, where it absolutely is worthless. But that's who 75% of the people are going to have adverse effects for the flu and are filling the hospital beds are senior citizens. Yet they don't have science. And we can prove that they've never had science and knew they didn't have science on their side. Therefore, that opens them up to being sued. And I believe we should be seeing lots of lawsuits in the upcoming year against vaccine manufacturers. Much like these 12 guys sued Halliburton's subsidiary and won $85 million. What would happen if people began to sue the vaccine manufacturers? You're talking about over a million proven injured people from vaccines, deaths into the thousands. They would be facing a much bigger financial bill, probably into the hundreds of billions of dollars. That's my part. Now we're going to go over, take a break, and take your calls. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Knoll. TalkBack is this program today. We'll take your calls in just a moment. Please stay with us. Say hello to Jose in New York City. Hi, Jose.
I'm wondering if you can talk about ways to lessen or eliminate eye floaters or cloudy vision.
Why don't I do this? For the next person who may call and ask about glaucoma, cataracts, macular degeneration, why don't we just look at everything that would be important for healthy eyes? How's that?
Great. Terrific.
Okay. First, let's be aware that a lot of things can hurt the eye. What is known as oxidative stress. Just being outside in sunlight without some good sun shield glasses, you know, the exposure to sunlight can be damaging. And the recommendation is that people who must deal with prolonged exposure should wear ultraviolet protective sunglasses that block both types of UV rays, UVA and UVB. UV ray is the ultraviolet radiation with a wavelength of 320 to 400 nanometers, and it passes right through the Earth's ozone layer. And UVB is ultraviolet radiation with a wavelength of 280 to 320 nanometers. And the ozone absorbs most of this radiation, but a small amount gets through and can cause cataracts and even benign lesions that grow on the side of the cornea. I would say that we've got to keep our liver healthy. So glutathione in reduced form, that the free-form amino acid complex with glutathione would be very good, and that's a powerful antioxidant. N-acetylcysteine, NAC, generally 500 milligrams twice a day. I would also use OccuCare from Nature's Plus, that's good, and taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E, that is important for maintaining eye function, and also it's present in the retina of the eye in high concentrations. Vitamin A, generally 25,000 units, absolutely necessary, absolutely at the top of my list for healthy eyes. It protects the eye from free radicals. Also, what is called zeaxanthin, Z-E-A-X-A-N, THIN, generally about 10 milligrams. A B-complex, generally about 50 milligrams. And vitamin C, probably the single most important thing you can take, 1 to 2,000 milligrams 4 or 5 times a day. Bayberry bark, cayenne in the form of capsicum, and red raspberry leaves. All good. And also more of the cruciferous vegetables, your broccoli, and watercress, very good. Sunflower, sprouts, excellent for you. And the more green juices you have, the better it is. But also you have to eliminate anything that lowers the immune system or causes oxidative stress. And that would be your fried foods, caffeine, sugars, artificial sweeteners, but also your adrenocorticotropic hormones, gout drugs, Zilprim, anticoagulants like heparin and warfarin, aspirin, corticosteroids, diuretics, antihistamines. Marijuana is terrible for the eyes. One of the worst things you can take in the world for your eyes is marijuana. Streptomycin, sulfur drugs, tetracycline, those are all bad for your eyes. So just understand that there's always a side effect for things. So those are the things that can make a difference. Okay?
All the best. Thank you, Gary.
Have a nice day.
You too.
Let's say hello to Chenise from Vermont. Hi, Chenise. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. I'd like to know if you plan on reaching out to people who were not able to come to the meetings on Sunday at such short notice, because I would like to be considered for one.
Okay, we're going to do one more meeting this coming Sunday at noon. For those who were not able to attend, we got a lot of calls because we were packed. And so this is not a lecture on homesteading. These are people who would like to be considered for a homesteading position. And so you can call tomorrow, not today, at 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422. It'll be at noon next Sunday, okay?
Thank you.
All the best to you. Mm-hmm. Michael from Brooklyn. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Gary.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent, thank you.
Great. I have a question. What do you think? I'm looking at all the coverage about this flu epidemic, this, that, and the third, and how some should get the flu vaccination, and I don't trust it. So, how do you feel about taking vitamin D3 and CoQ10, or you know, some other herbal thing to counteract the effects of the flu? Because I really don't trust that flu vaccine that they are urging people to take.
I don't blame you, and what I suggest is this. It's up on the website now. Read the article that Richard Gale and myself wrote about the fraud of the flu vaccine when it comes to efficacy. We've been told, take the flu vaccine. It's the only thing that will work, and especially if you're a senior citizen.
Right.
Just the opposite is true. But what we did is we used only peer review literature to show that everything they're telling us is wrong.
Mm.
And in point of fact, the majority, over 75% of the people suffering from the flu or pneumonia right now are senior citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And the vaccine is virtually worthless. I had on Tom Jefferson, last week from the Cochrane Group out of Italy, and he said that 95% of all the studies that he looked at on the flu vaccine were terrible, meaning they had terrible construction, and these were the ones made by the pharmaceutical giants making the product.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I would do. Now, I can't tell someone to take a vaccine or not. That's their business. I will tell you this, that in fact, I just told someone today, I was walking down the street, and this woman came up, and she was coughing. And she said, oh, Gary, she said, I got my daughter with me. And she said, we both are now sick. And I asked her what had happened. And she works for a woman who is a senior citizen. And by the time they realized that the woman had the flu, everyone who worked there had the flu.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, all right, did you do the following? Did you wear surgical masks and have everyone in your family wear a surgical mask? No. Well, then you're going to spread it to one another because it can last in the air. Did you spray air therapy? Walk around a room and spray air therapy. Every school teacher should spray air therapy in between classes. It can kill viruses and bacteria, and it can land on tops of things that can also kill it. But you should just take rubbing alcohol with a paper towel and just wipe down all surface areas, doorknobs, handles, toilet flushing, opening and closing medical cabinets. Put your toothbrush and hydrogen peroxide upside down to disinfect it. Use paper plates. If you're going, if you're around someone who has the flu, wear a mask, because that's why you can get it or prevent it. Now, those are simple things. Washing your hand repeatedly if you've come into contact with anyone who's, or even surfaces. Then simply take vitamin D3, vitamin C, the omega-3 fatty acids, Powdiarco, astragalus, echinacea, wild oregano, oil of colloidal silver. Keep your immune system strong. That will kill everything, but it also strengthens your immune system.
You know, it's funny you say that. Before you go, my mother, she's from the Caribbean, Trinidad, and she's 81 and she hasn't had the flu in about 15 years. And what she does is she mixes a concoction of 6 fresh lemons, a bulb of garlic, 2 teaspoons of ginger powder, some honey, some pineapple juice, and a 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne powder. And for some reason, she thinks it works.
It does. Your mother is smarter than probably on this issue than probably all the doctors in the United States that are telling people to get the flu vaccine and that's all they need to do. Or one complete blathering person, a medical doctor I saw while in a airport, who said, oh, if you're around someone who's sick, take the medicines they're taking.
As if, really?
Yeah, that's exactly the advice. I mean, I can't tell you how offensive that is to anyone who has a brain. But clearly, this is one of those gold stethoscope persons who don't think and don't read the literature. Thanks a lot, Michael. Appreciate your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Luann Panessi. Luann, your turn.
I've got a very straightforward, quick and easy question from Tom from Long Island. He's been listening to PRN, and he says, how is PRN doing?
Well, on Friday, Jason, our program director, said that for the first time, Progressive Radio Network, on Google Analytics search of 21, I think it was 21 million searches, was number one. And all of the tens of thousands of internet radio stations were number one. We'd been number two for a long time, but now we're up number one. And the phone service that we use is also, we're number one out of, I think it was 4,000 plus stations and people using it, and we're number one. It's in the millions and millions of minutes in a short period of time. We got a lot of people listening over the telephone. So we're fine. We've added 22 brand new hosts, including Rabbi Michael Lerner, who's on Monday evenings at 8 o'clock following my progressive commentary hour for the Rebbe, the Rebel, and the one other person who is a preacher from Riverside Church. And boy, they do a wonderful program on spiritual issues. And Glenn Ford, Black Agenda Brenda, we got the best progressive minds I know of. So we're rocking. We're having a good time. And we're getting the information out. I thank you for asking. And we're there. We're trying to do the right thing by presenting non-aligned issues. We don't have a ideology that we're offering people. Just common sense, truth, and reason. How to live a better life, how to make positive choices. That's what we're about. So thank you, Luann. We're out of time. I'm looking at the clock. I want to thank you all for taking the time. This hour just whizzed by. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And go to our archives and look up Conversations with Remarkable Minds or Progressive Radio Network topics. Lots of good information to download. Have a nice day, everyone. I was born by